The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program and, of course, to a very special news and current affairs source, the global news talk station TNT Radio. As you're probably aware, news is spreading far and wide about this network. We're seeing more mentions of the news we break in mainstream coverage. We've just eclipsed 5 million downloads too, and our followers on all social media platforms are increasing every single day. That is the plan. And it's an exciting place to be part of, both as a host and a listener. So thank you so much for joining us as we try and make a difference to what needs to happen in this world, as we decode the BS and find you the truth. Today, the missing piece in the alleged Biden criminal scheme puzzle, as the FBI fesses up to having a document detailing the investigation the Bureau began into the president when he was vice president. I'll get you the latest on that story, and we'll hear what the key Republican chasing down the evidence has to say about Biden's pattern of conduct with foreign governments. Now, never before in the history of military operations has an Australian Victoria Cross recipient had his reputation so besmirched. The case against Ben Robert Smith, who was an SAS soldier, has made news right around the world today as his defamation case against the media who made the allegations was thrown out of court. Today, why it is wrong to join the lynch mob, and I'll explain why I had that view after consuming as much of the material presented to the court as I could. And what now for this decorated soldier, plus the veterans group who's standing right behind him? They will explain exactly why. Now, there was some horrific footage emerging from the drug alleys of Philadelphia this week. You may have seen it. I just thought, after seeing that earlier in the week, we should investigate what is this all about. It looked like as if someone was shooting a scene for The Walking Dead or zombies. The drug Trank is basically joining fentanyl as the new crazy drug of choice this year in the United States. And I'll speak with a woman who works at the front line of abuse and homelessness very shortly, who will take us inside the world of Trank and why it has the potential to kill millions of Americans before taking hold around the world. Our political animal on the show today will be the Conservative politician and leader of the Liberal Democrats in New South Wales, John Ruddick. We'll jump on all the big news, including Joe Biden's latest stage collapse, the dangerous rise in the minimum wage, and is it time to reset school hours? In the Australian context, that is resetting 9 to 3. Is 9 to 3 a sexist relic, do you think? Which, when you think about it, assumed that women did not work, and so therefore they could easily pick up children just after 3 o'clock. You think about the double benefit attached to this. Not only would men and women be freer to work and therefore unencumbered to get to a school to pick up a child or pay for someone else to pick up a child, but the kids themselves would get maybe an extra 3 hours of education or at least an extra hour, and then you could dedicate the other hours to sport, which they all need, or a little bit of general recreation. Now, there's a politician who's made the argument in his maiden speech to the parliament. So big tick for him. And we'll talk about that with John Ruddick a little later in the program. Plus, the former Productivity Commission official and economist, Dr. Alan Moran, he will join us on the program today to talk truth about wind farms in particular, but renewables in general, and why the promise of cheap energy is a complete lie. He'll join us a little bit later in the program. And do not think for a second that I run a two-horse race here. You can join the conversation at any time, but make sure you jump on and have your say. There's no ceiling on opinion, no censorship. It is the best form of media you could be involved with. the best form. Here are the numbers. If you're dialing in from the United States and Canada, it's 1-888-201-6425. That's 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, where it's just gone 5 o'clock in the morning in London, 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, here is your number. Write it down, put it in your smartphone, 1-800-670-310. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live. We are from the city of Sydney on the Global News Talk Network, tntradio.live.
News as it happens.
I feel more informed when I listen.
Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
We will catch up with Megan Cohen, who is in the front line of Drug Alley in Philadelphia, very shortly on the show. Well, we've witnessed another presidential fall. I should say a physical fall at that. Joe Biden has fallen today again whilst on stage at the US Air Force Academy. After handing out diplomas to the military graduates, Biden was forced to stand on the front of the stage for about 2 hours. Who organized that? America's oldest president in history at aged 80 appeared to trip on a black sandbag that was positioned on the stage. And these sandbags are positioned to keep things tied down. That is flyers, banners, chairs, etc. After falling to his knees and being helped very quickly by a group of officials, Biden pointed to the sandbag. The White House said afterwards he was fine. But if you thought the president may be in for a fall from grace over allegations that his family benefited from deals he did as vice president, you might be getting closer to the mark as of today, because Joe Biden has gone from being in a spot of bother to being in trouble. FBI Director Christopher Wray has now confirmed the existence of a document alleging that the president was engaged in a criminal bribery scheme with a foreign national. Republicans on the House Oversight and Accountability Committee have been ruthless in pursuing evidence in this case and have struck gold. Now, in a Twitter post, the panel announced that Wray had told them the document was real and offered to let them review it, but has failed to produce the document for the Oversight Committee as a whole. Now, as the Epoch Times reports today, if true, the acknowledgement is the latest in an escalating showdown between House Oversight Chairman James Comer and the head of the FBI over the document. You'll recall that about a month ago, and I told you the details here, Comer revealed that he'd received highly credible, unclassified whistleblower disclosures that the FBI possessed an unclassified record that describes an alleged criminal scheme involving then Vice President Joe Biden and a foreign national relating to the exchange of money for policy decisions. Comer gave Wray a May 30 deadline to produce the document or face charges for contempt of Congress, a deadline Wray missed. And so there were many Democrats saying, well, the document doesn't exist. It's a fake. It's been made up. Well, the threat won the support of Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy, who agreed to hold Wray in contempt if the deadline wasn't met. It was a fair request. And that is what pushed the FBI into a corner and has now led to the verification of the existence of the document. Well, in an emailed response to the Epoch Times, the FBI said that it, quote, remains committed to cooperating with the committee in good faith, saying that it had made extraordinary accommodation to meet Comer's request while complying with a confidentiality and national security requirement. Quote, in a letter to Chairman Comer earlier today, the FBI committed to providing access to information responsive to the committee subpoena in a format and setting that maintains confidentiality and protects important security interests and the integrity of FBI investigations. That came from a spokesperson. Last week, the statement went on, Director Wray scheduled a telephone call for tomorrow to provide additional details of the FBI's extraordinary accommodation. They described their own efforts as extraordinary, to satisfy the subpoena request. Now, tonight, James Comer confirmed to Fox News that he and others on the Oversight Committee would accept that invitation to meet with the FBI director to cite the document. He said he still wanted the FBI to produce the document publicly, and rightfully said you can simply redact the sources of the information or any security notations on the form. You just redact it with a big black pen. They do it all the time. Here's James Comer tonight.
We will go there and look at the redacted document, but we know what's in the document. And the reason we find this allegation credible, not only because of the credibility of the whistleblower, but because we've seen a pattern of Joe Biden, when he was vice president, leaving a country after he talks about foreign aid and foreign policy, and his family members start receiving payments from that company through shell companies that are then laundered down to Biden family members. So there is a pattern of behavior. And we saw that in Romania, we've seen that in China, we've seen that in other countries, that would suggest that this allegation has merit.
This is a major step in their attempts to try and connect Joe Biden to the taking of monies for his own family through foreign nationals during and after visits as vice president to other countries. Now, it appears as if the FBI is still refusing to hand over the document publicly, despite allowing Comer to cite it maybe as early as tomorrow. The agency dismissed calls to hold Ray in contempt for refusing to do so, saying any discussion of escalation under these circumstances is unnecessary. It is true that there is no doubt the document now does exist. The Republicans weren't making it up, as some alleged. And it accuses the president of some very serious, indictable allegations of running a criminal scheme in favor of the Biden family. But is it enough to see Joe Biden charged with such crimes? Now, the committee still has this whistleblower up its sleeve who may be willing to testify in a court of law what he knows about the validity of the scheme. And initiating such proceedings before next year's presidential campaign would be the Republican mission. That's not out of the question. And that would be enough, I would have thought, to negate Biden's tilt at a second presidential term. The hawks are circling the highest office in the land. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Steve Hook is talking about.
Trump has been the big evil. He has been Hitler. And now the media is literally saying that DeSantis is worse than Hitler. So if there was ever, and there was for the, you know, in the 90s, maybe even in the early to mid 2000s, you could have the debate. Is the media just absolutely partisan? And people on both sides could debate that subject, and they felt really good about their answers. Well, there's no debate anymore. The media is absolutely completely in the tank for socialism. Come Marxism, come Stalinism, come Maoism, whatever. They're all about the isms now, and they're not too fan-friendly to anybody in the GOP. You'll recall that they called Bush the elder Hitler. They called Bush the younger Hitler. They called John McCain Hitler. They called Mitt Romney Hitler. And of course, Trump is now, he's really, really Hitler. And now Ron DeSantis is, he's really even worse than Hitler, which is just absolutely asinine. But by God, these idiots in the media will absolutely stand up for it.
Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
It is, but it's also your show and a chance for you to have your say, even via email. And in reference to this global news about Victoria Cross recipient Ben Robert Smith, Jason has written to me and said, as far as Ben Robert Smith goes, it's a civil matter, but held by a trial judge. Don't hang him out to dry, Australia. Otherwise, we will be looking into what happened in Vietnam as well. No wonder the ADF can't get very many recruits if that's how we treat our servicemen and women. Have a great weekend. You too. Jason, thank you very much for your contribution. Now, if you haven't seen this week's horrifying footage of drug addicts in Philadelphia, reportedly hooked on a new substance known as Trank, writhing around like a scene from the TV show Walking Dead, please search for it. You need to know what's coming. It has shocked internet viewers, with many people expressing their shock and disgust for what this drug can do. Now, the footage, which has been viewed more than 10 million times, was shot in the Kensington area of Philadelphia, which is well known for its drug trade. This area has seen a rise in the drug xylazine, or should I say xylazine, also known as Trank, technically a sedative, which enhances the effects of heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl. It's like, I guess, taking a double dose of the most heinous drugs available. I wanted to get an expert in this field today on the program to educate us on this new frontier in illicit drug, where it's come from, and where it's spreading to. Megan Cohen is the founder of the Grace Project, a not-for-profit organization which operates in the front line of abuse and homelessness. Megan Cohen, welcome to TNT Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Wow. That footage looks almost staged, like a movie scene. Describe for my listeners who haven't seen it, what's happening in the Kensington area of Philly?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to describe. Even the footage doesn't necessarily do it justice. You know, it's the largest open air drug market. And what we see on a weekly basis, our nonprofit is out there every single Thursday night. You know, and it's an open air drug market where people are buying, selling and using drugs, you know, right out in the open. With xylazine being in the drug supply, a lot of people keep saying, you know, it's this new drug that's being put into the supply that's out there. It's not new. It's been around since the early 2000s, but it has continued to pick up, and it is now in more than 90% of the drug supply in Philadelphia and, you know, all of the surrounding areas going into all of the other states. And we're seeing a lot of different effects from it that we weren't seeing with, you know, when it was fentanyl that was in the heroin supply. You know, and when it was strictly heroin. So things are changing. You know, people are not getting sober as frequently. You know, they're not getting clean off the drug because the detox is worse. You know, there's a lot that's going on with it. You know, and we're definitely seeing the effects from it, not just in the side effects from the drug, but the amount of people that just aren't willing to get help because of how bad, you know, the withdrawal is.
So the withdrawal is bad. And what are the other effects that you have cited and seen?
Yeah, the withdrawal is absolutely horrible. But one of the worst side effects that we're seeing, unfortunately, is the wounds that are occurring from xylazine. We have people that are constantly losing limbs because if they have a wound that opens up and the wound becomes necrotic, they're eventually losing that limb. It's getting to the point where it's not savable. We've seen a lot of people that, you know, a big part of why they're not getting these wounds treated is because, again, they're scared of this detox. And this is something, you know, again, it's been in the drug supply, but not at the rate that it is now. So it is fairly new with the amount of wounds and how severe the wounds are out there. You know, and it's, I mean, you can smell it. It eats away at their skin and it continues
to get worse.
Yes, correct.
Have you seen anything like this before?
No. I mean, you know, everyone used to talk about the crocodile and this is, I mean, this is, it's a whole nother level. And I can't even to put into words what these wounds look like. There's no way to do it justice. You know, anytime that I've effectively tried to describe them to people, when they see it in person or they see pictures, they're still just blown away. You know, it's, we've never seen anything like this.
So this is created in a, I guess, an official legal laboratory, and what, modified for street use?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it enhances the supply of what they're already using, you know, and it's tranquilizer for animals. You know, it's not made for human consumption. So it's recently finally been scheduled, you know, and that doesn't necessarily do anything to solve the problem, you know, but it's, the effects are so severe, and the rate that we're seeing it has increased so rapidly, you know, that there's no denying it anymore, you know, so it's time to respond, and people are talking about it now. And it's unfortunate that it had to get to this point, because again, this is something that's been going on since the early 2000s, you know, and it wasn't recognized and nobody did anything about it. And now here we are today where, you know, most of the people that we serve on a weekly basis are suffering from these wounds. Or again, they're people that really want to get sober. They don't want to be on this, but they're so scared of the withdrawal. You know, that, I mean, it's just really, it's having a huge impact.
And how are the hospitals in Philadelphia handling the constant arrival of people who need their wounds attended to?
You know, it's tough because it's such a high volume that the hospitals they're very backed up. And I've talked to quite a few hospitals out there. I've presented for some of the staff for some of these hospitals, as far as like having compassion for the individuals that are coming in and possibly coming in, you know, on a continued basis again and again, and still showing these people compassion and kindness, and trying to explain to them too the importance of updating the detox protocols. Because again, like, you know, I remember when fentanyl became bigger, you know, and people having different responses to what a typical heroin detox would look like, and needing, you know, different combinations or different amounts. And it's the same thing. And it's scary because, you know, it's taking more to make somebody just comfortable to get them through that detox than it did in the past. So it's something that's unfamiliar to a lot of medical professionals, which kind of scares them in updating these protocols. And again, in turn, you know, is causing some of them not to do so, and then causing our people to, you know, really suffer when they're trying to get off of this. And ultimately, a lot of them give up when they get, you know, a couple days in and they leave and they go right back to, you know, right back to the street.
And given the uptake in fentanyl, I guess the most popular mix at the moment would be fentanyl and trank, right?
Correct.
Who's Correct. Using, Megan? Who's using?
I mean, it's anybody that has, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, a memo went out and told everybody that was using what they thought was heroin or what they thought was fentanyl and said, hey, there's xylazine in your drugs. You know, so it's the same people, they're getting it from the same blocks, because, you know, the way that Kensington is set up, more than half the blocks out there are drug blocks, you know, and these are the same blocks that were supplying what used to be heroin, then what used to be fentanyl, and now it's this trank dope. So they're going to the same spots getting, you know, what they need, and all of a sudden what's in it is different. And, you know, there's not any set group that's using. I mean, addiction's touching everybody, and that's part of why it's being talked about so much now, because, you know, there was this stigma that was on it for so long, and this belief that it was only, you know, a certain type of demographic. And, you know, that's just not the case. Myself, you know, I'm in recovery and I struggled with this disease, and I wasn't somebody that anybody expected to ever end up on the streets. And I was homeless in Kensington, addicted as well. So this is something that's, it's affecting everywhere. It's affecting every demographic, every type of person. You know, nobody's necessarily above this. And once they're hooked, you know, it's only a matter of time until, especially now with the way that things are, that they're, if it's, you know, opiates or really, you know, they're putting it in everything. So it's only a matter of time until somebody crosses paths with xylazine.
I do want to talk a little bit further about your own personal experiences. I'll do that in just a second, and how you came about the Grace Project. But just getting back to what you've just said. So professionals in Philadelphia, this is where you are, you're seeing professionals take Trank and added to maybe whatever heroin or cocaine they're having as well?
This is, again, I don't want to say a specific group of people. I mean,
so it's
this
across the board.
It's across the board, 100%. Right. You know, it's not like everybody out in Philadelphia is using, you know, but there's a big draw to Philadelphia because it's an open air drug market. So a lot of the people that are using in the surrounding areas are being drawn to Philadelphia and using there. Now, we also have, you know, beautiful families out there and people that don't, you know, so it's not all of Philadelphia is using drugs, but this one specific part of Philadelphia really does have a very large pool to individuals impacted by the disease of addiction because of the fact that it's, you know, more socially accepted there because it is an open air drug market and it has gotten so bad that, you know, we're having trouble getting a handle on it. You know, and that's what it comes down to. So you see all walks of life out there. And the ones that, you know, we typically serve are typically the ones that end up, you know, they've ended up homeless out there. But they all come from all different walks of life. They come from all over. You know, so you can't just classify it to one type of person.
Okay. I want to go down the track of what you've experienced yourself to give people an idea and also talk about the Grace Project, which is very important to do. But I need to just pause and take a news update, if I may, right here on TNT Radio.
We're ready.
News.
The news
is our business, and we never close. Never close.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Australia's most decorated living soldier has been exposed in court as a murderer and a liar after losing an historic defamation case brought against three of the nation's leading newspapers that had accused him of war crimes. The Pentagon has announced it'll cough up the cash that Ukraine needs to cover the cost of Elon Musk's satellite internet services, and it's been revealed the environmental impact from beef that's grown in labs trumps the carbon footprint of traditionally raised meat.
You're with Chris Smith
on today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
I'm with Megan Cohen from the Grace Project. We're talking about Trank and the impact it's now having, added with other drugs, especially given flight, I guess, by the open-air drug markets in Kensington in Philadelphia and what impact that's having on the area. So this is obviously a job for the Grace Project, but for those who don't know, you came to this work from a place of drug abuse yourself. How did you get in there and how did you get out of there?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a complicated answer, you know, as far as how did I get there. You know, I came from a good area. I had a good upbringing. I was a good kid. I wasn't somebody that was expected to ever become addicted to drugs. And when I had, you know, it started with just what I thought was normal, you know, drinking and smoking weed, you know, and kind of getting into that party scene and then experimenting with Percocet, you know, and eventually getting addicted to that. And I, you know, for so long, I thought I was different and there was no way. I was too smart to become addicted and I was just having fun. Yeah. And that was my belief until I tried to stop and I experienced what withdrawal felt like. And I learned that, you know, as long as I did what I had to get what I needed every day, I would never have to go through those feelings of withdrawal. And from there, my addiction took off and it progressed, you know, and it went from Percocets to heroin. And then it was heroin and cocaine. You know, smoking crack and IV heroin use. So it continued to progress. And ultimately, you know, I was doing things that were against my morals and values and against what anyone would have ever expected of me. And it got me to a place where, you know, I was homeless. And I'd been homeless in Kensington by choice a couple of times because I felt comfortable, you know, doing what I wanted to do out there. And I was amongst a bunch of other people that were doing the same thing and, you know, kind of stuck in that same state of hopelessness that I was, you know, and ultimately got to a point where it wasn't by choice anymore. My family, understandably so, got to a point where they wouldn't allow me to be under their roof. My mom had kicked me out of her house. Other family members wouldn't welcome me in theirs. And, you know, it was just this vicious cycle and it led me to my absolute bottom this last time around when I was out in Kensington. And the way that I got out was hope was restored in me, and that was through a complete stranger. I had been to treatment 71 times before getting sober.
And 71 times to try and get over this?
Yes. Wow. 71 times.
And the stranger came out of nowhere to do what?
I was in an abandoned house, and, you know, I was at a point where, again, I didn't have anybody, and I wasn't necessarily a religious person, but I was praying to whatever it was out there to show me some sort of sign that my life was meant for more, or to just take me out, because I was at the point where I didn't want to be alive anymore because I was stuck in this torture. I was, for lack of a better word, I was in hell. And I didn't see a way out of it. As bad as I wanted a different life, I didn't know how to get to that point. And a complete stranger, when I walked out, and she treated me like a human when everybody else was treating me like I was an insect. You know, I'd walk into stores and people were looking at me sideways. And again, I understood why, because most likely I was in the store to rob it at that point in my life. Not always. And that was just the initial response that people had to me. So here was this total stranger, that stopped me as I'm walking down the street, and she spoke primarily Spanish, and, she grabs me, and this other lady, cause I turn around thinking I was getting robbed, and, another woman comes running up, and she's like, no, she wants to talk to you. And she said, something's drawing her to you. She feels like, you don't belong out here. She wants to know what your story is. And I was completely honest. And I said, I have felony warrants out right now. I robbed my grandmother. My mom kicked me out of her house. I'm on heroin and I'm on cocaine. And I just kind of was just truthful, and completely transparent about what my situation was. And despite that, this woman still wanted to help me. And, she let me take a shower. She gave me clean clothes and she gave me warm food. I always say, like, what my nonprofit does, we don't bring people home with us. And I don't know what she was thinking after I told her that I had just robbed my grandmother. But the reality is, when I think back to it, she didn't have anything. She really didn't. There wasn't much in this house. And she didn't have much to give, but yet here she was being drawn to me and wanting to help me. And the woman who was translating for us didn't come in. So it was, we had limited communication because she spoke some English, but not much. And after I showered and I put on the clean clothes and I ate, when I was going to leave, we gave each other a hug. And when we pulled away, we looked into each other's eyes and both of us started crying, and we didn't know each other. And this was a really powerful moment for me. It was a direct answer to my prayers in a sense. And on top of that, it reminded me that there was still something in me that even though I couldn't see it myself anymore, somebody else could see. And that there was people that actually cared. So it gave me that tiny little bit of hope that I needed to say, let me give this one more shot. And I called my mom, and I said, I'm ready. And my mom came and got me. And from that point on, my journey into recovery had finally started this last time around. And, my life is drastically different today. And what it took was that, random act of kindness from a total stranger that gave me that little bit of hope that I need. And that's the inspiration behind the Grace Project. It's creating that on a grander scale. We don't actually focus on addiction. We focus on hope. So we have multiple programs, even outside of our Kensington program, because at the end of the day, what I believe kept me out there for so long was that state of hopelessness. So part of what we do is, we try to show people that there is always hope. If you're still breathing, there's hope and there's people that care. And aren't looking at you like you're nothing. There's people that understand and that want to help. And if you take the right steps, you can turn your life around too and possibly cause the same ripple effect that woman caused by helping me.
I hope you've employed the Spanish guardian angel.
I have tried, I actually had this conversation with somebody yesterday. She is the only person from my story that I have not reconnected with yet. And I
you don't know where she
down,
is?
I know where her house is, down to like five houses. So you have to understand, I was on drugs at the time. I couldn't, if I walk onto that block, I can't say it's this house, but I can say that it's on the left-hand side of Reed Street, one of the first five houses. I need somebody who speaks Spanish to go with me and knock on doors. The problem is we've had a couple people offer, and then they learn more about the area and they they back out. You know, I know it wasn't the first house because that man had pulled a gun on me before. So I know it wasn't that one. So it's somewhere between the second and the fifth house. You know, but I'm confident that I will find her. I've talked to people out there and they've told me that nobody has moved out of that block. You know, so once I get to, and I actually have someone that works with Bucks County Drug Court, which I had graduated from, and she offered to go out with me. So we're actually planning to go out probably within the next month or so on a Saturday that she has available. And she's willing to, you know, knock on doors with me despite the, you know, how the neighborhood is, and try to find this woman for me. It's going to be tough because I look a lot different. I was in a completely different state then. She's not going to recognize me. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't describe her to a T, but I think if I saw her, I would know, yes, that's her. Or if we show her the picture of me when I was using, she'll know it's me. So it's not that easy because I looked a lot different. Things were a lot different and I was high, you know, when this happened. But I have faith. I have faith that me and her are going to reconnect. I talk about her all the time. I have done a lot of media stuff. I mentioned her for a reason, you know, whether that's somebody else brings it up to her and she somehow gets in contact or what, but I definitely have faith that at some point, you know, I'm going to reconnect with her and be able to tell her, you know, how much she helped not only me, but everybody that the Grace Project has now helped in turn because of her.
There's a documentary in all of this, documentary with the Spanish Guardian Angel, just on the Grace Project. Does the Grace Project and the work that you do and the lives that you save give you hope and optimism about the future of the United States of America, or does it make you pessimistic about where the country is heading?
You know, it's, again, it's a tough question. There is a lot of work that needs to be done. And I don't think it's just necessarily in the United States. I think that it's going on everywhere because we are constantly having other countries reach out to us saying that they're starting to see similar problems and, you know, in their areas. So I think that, you know, there's a lot that needs to happen to tackle this problem because it's not just a statewide problem or a country. Like this is worldwide, you know.
So other countries reach out to the Grace Project, but do politicians and lawmakers in the United States reach out to you to find out exactly what's happening, how to stop the widespread hemorrhage and how to solve the problem?
So some of them, that's, you know, again, a funny timing on that, because I did have a politician actually reach out yesterday about frequently hearing my name and wanting to sit down and talk with me. Now, I've had a few of them reach out in the past, and I've sat down with a couple of them, and a lot of times they say, hey, I want to do something, I want to make changes, but then in turn, they end up wasting my time a little bit. So this one specifically, when I had initially met her and she had, you know, asked about having a sit down, my response anytime that it is, you know, a politician or anybody that has anything to do with pot, like, you know, don't ask me to sit down with you just to help your campaign. Don't waste my time. If you're not actually going to do something and hear what I have to say, because it is me and the other people that have lived experience and that are on the front lines of this, that can help. You know, and it's a big problem, but little steps and we can get there and we can start making headway. But when the people that are making the policies and deciding what to do to tackle this have no lived experience and aren't on the front lines, you know, their solutions aren't working. So
it doesn't say much, Megan. It doesn't say much for all the politicians in all of the United States of America that up until now, you haven't had a politician who really just wanted to help as opposed to feather their own nest. It doesn't say much for politicians.
Correct. Yeah.
Are you confident that the politician who contacted you yesterday might be different?
Nope. We'll have to see. I hope she proves me wrong and she changes my opinion there. You know, I really do. But no, from what I've seen, I'm unfortunately not.
No wonder the problem seems endless. I've got one last question to ask you, and no doubt people will want me to ask you this. We know that you're committed to the Grace Project. You're doing an incredible job, and I've seen you on high profile media frequently, which is great now. But your personal life, I don't want to intrude. Are you functioning well yourself and are you happy?
I am. You know, it's, I have a lot on my plate because I not only run the Grace Project, but I, you know, I also work full time as a director in the field of addiction. So I work for a treatment center as well that I help to, you know, get opened up and to keep running. So I, you know, it's a pretty big position there, and it comes with a lot of responsibility. I also sit on multiple community boards. So I have a lot going on, but I make sure that I'm taking care of myself too. And sometimes what that looks like is I run myself into the ground and, you know, I have to reach out to my sponsor and say, hey, help me get refocused and help me get my peace back. You know, and, but overall it really is such a beautiful life. You know,
you
my life today, I they're all in my life, all of them. Correct. You know, I don't have kids of my own. I'm not married, but I have my siblings in my life, my parents. I am a super aunt. I'm so proud of the aunt that I am today. I'm very involved. So yeah,
it could have been very different, couldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. A couple of years, but like, the fact that I even am in those babies' lives and you know, I have two nieces and I have a nephew, and none of them have ever seen me high. They're the only part of my bloodline that hasn't. And I, when I tell you I live for those babies, I mean, they're my world.
Yeah. You keep saving other people's lives. It was meant to be, thanks to the Spanish guardian angel. I'd love to catch up with you once you speak to the Spanish guardian angel, Megan, if I could.
Absolutely. I'll keep you posted.
Megan, thank you so much for your time. All the very best with the Grace Project and all the very best with your life.
Thank you so much.
Megan Cohen is her name, from the Grace Project. Do not forget what you've just heard, because sometime in your own life, you'll come across someone in your family, friends or family friends, that face the same obstacles, trying to rescue someone out of addiction, trying to rescue them from a place that they can't tear themselves away from. And that interview and aspects of that experience may help you deal with your own predicament or dilemmas. How inspirational is Megan Cohen? And how fortunate that out of the blue, a Spanish guardian angel changed the course of her life. Bloody amazing. This is TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
New York City's been overrun with illegals, and Mayor Eric Adams is not pleased. Most of them have come from the great state of Texas, where Governor Greg Abbott has made sure that those crossing the border into his state are sent off to welcoming cities of sanctuary, like New York City. This has led to Adams accusing Abbott of racism, because he said sanctuary cities have black mayors. Okay. And Adams even started doing what he blasted the Texas governor for doing, sending illegals to other cities in New York State. But these are non-sanctuary cities who don't want them there, and lawsuits have been filed against Adams' moves. Adams has also decided to use prisons that have been closed down, like the infamous Rikers Island, and public school gymnasiums to house illegals, the latter causing well-deserved outrage from parents of students and others. He's considered closing off streets to house them, and now the mayor's asking houses of worship to take in these people, 15 or so, and the city will cough up $30,000 per month for their efforts. Folks, I'm telling you, this may be happening in New York City now, but just wait. It'll be coming to your area before you know it. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
You're listening to Chris Smith
on today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
Amazing. Amazing. One here from Alex, a listener just writing about what he's just heard. Chris, alcohol was bad, but this trank sounds like an absolute nightmare. Thank goodness you and your guest are now clean from drugs. Yeah, and in a way, Donehouse doesn't have to be top-level narcotics that people are committed to and trying to get off. It can be alcohol, it can be cigarettes, it can be things that change your life that need to be gotten rid of. And that's what you're saying, Alex, and I appreciate your call. I appreciate that very much. I wanted to talk about Walmart today because, you know, we've been having this discussion and I've been updating you on Target's failed pride display where they've now lost $10 billion off the value of the company because they didn't think, you see, that customers would mind having children's clothes and bikinis and swimwear and textbooks that introduce them to transgender adult issues. Well, Walmart is venturing into this space, similar to Target. This is amazing. This is from the Epoch Times this morning. Walmart's Environmental, Social and Governance Report, the ESG report, reveals that the company makes special provisions for LGBT groups, including specifically sourcing supplies from people professing such identities. So can you just cop this for a second? They will go out of their way to supply clothing for customers that were made by people from the LGBT group. Really? Really? Not based on cost, not based on quality, but based on LGBT connection. Is that what you want from your family-friendly Walmart? Now, Target has been the focus of boycott calls due to offering pride products this year aimed at children. That's the point. Target's 2022 ESG report, yes, they had one, shows that at least 51% of its suppliers are owned, controlled, and operated by women, BIPOC, LGBTQIA+, veterans, or people with disabilities. In addition, 59% of their Pride Month assortment was created by LGBT creators and brands. So Walmart has also been shown to conduct an inclusive sourcing program for LGBT groups. Pity help someone who might be heterosexual trying to get ahead and create a company that makes fabulous clothing for kids. Pity help you. You've got no disadvantage, so you won't get an advantage. Walmart Supplier Inclusion Initiative offers companies owned and operated by members of LGBT and other identities like ethnic and racial minorities the opportunity to work with us while growing their business, according to Walmart's July 2022 ESG report. For our US businesses, we source more than $13.3 billion in goods and services from approximately 2,600 diverse suppliers. So you may actually be paying a little bit more. You may actually be getting inferior goods. But as long as it comes from someone from a minority group, that's all that matters to Walmart. That's all that matters to Target as well. I don't know what you think about that, but I'll put it out there before I make any further comment. I just think that this is not serving the customer. I just think that maybe what they should do is think about their one job, supplying affordable, top quality product to customers. And if it happens to be an LGBT group, fantastic. And if it happens to be a heterosexual family making clothing, fantastic. But why does one group have an advantage over another one? Give us a call on the talkback lines. You may want to talk also about what you just heard. And that interview, I can't get that interview out of my head because I found it compelling. I found it full of impact. And I found it so informative, how easy it is to get hooked. And we all have our addictions to certain substances in some way. We might have an addiction to an activity that we don't like. It might be an addiction to behaving in a particular way that we wish we'd change, or an addiction to alcohol, as I know I've had in life. But if you can work out a way through the maze, it is empowering and inspiring. And look what happens to Megan Cohen every day now. She saves people's lives. How fortunate for her. What did you think of Megan Cohen? And if only the Grace Project operated elsewhere. And isn't it interesting, of all the politicians that are situated in the United States, in that big building, the Capitol building, and she still hasn't had one legitimate, sincere politician approach her to tell the politicians or the Congress about the real problems on the front line and how to solve them. No one has bothered, and the only ones that have bothered have shown insincerity to boost up their own campaign. Doesn't that tell you a lot? It tells you a hell of a lot. I want to talk about working from home. Working from home is the equivalent, according to a report in news.com, of a two-day work week. Working from home for 5 days is equivalent to a two-day work week, making it a great lifestyle, but bad for companies, according to one tech executive who says it's time to admit that remote work doesn't work. This is big news. A lot of people would disagree. There are people working from home who might say that they are more constructive, productive than they were at work. I know I spoke to an executive who's a mate of mine, and I won't mention the person's name because you'll know him, but he said to me during COVID that when he sent everyone home, and they were call operators, taking calls from customers and getting things sent out to customers, he discovered that they were more productive when they were at home. But according to entrepreneur David Sacks, who's a close ally, by the way, of Tesla boss Elon Musk, he's one of a growing number of business leaders making a stand firmly against the work from home trend, which has emerged as a major flashpoint between companies and employees in the aftermath of COVID. There are many employees who just refuse to go back to work, whether that is because they don't feel comfortable working in an environment where they might get COVID because they're super scaredy cats still, or they think that they're more productive. And so they're having a barney with their employers and their bosses. Maybe you're in that situation. I'd love to hear from you. But this fellow Sacks wrote in a viral Twitter thread, which, by the way, has been viewed by more than 4.5 million people, it is time to admit that remote work doesn't work. Now, I've spoken about how attending school at home, that is being sent home by COVID-scared principals, is unworkable. And I've spoken to too many principals who've told me that it is completely and utterly unworkable. You don't have the same facilities, equipment, gear, one-on-one attention as you do in a classroom. Principals I've spoken to say that the kids came back uneducated, way behind their work, especially when you've got multiple siblings in a family. They can't, use the computer and then give it to another sibling to use for their, it just doesn't work. It's chaotic. Anyway, back to working from home. Sack says, WFH Friday is a four-day work week. Full WFH is a two-day work week. Work from home, meaning. Every interaction has to be scheduled, which means a lot of information sharing doesn't happen. And most information sharing, if you think about it, in work groups happens almost spontaneously, without planning, without being a point on a scheduled document. It is something that just springs to mind, and all of a sudden that idea is added to by a colleague, and then all of a sudden you have got one hell of a project on your hands. That kind of stuff doesn't necessarily work on Zoom, not in the same way. Remote is a great lifestyle, says Sacks, but not the way to build a great company. And it's interesting, a lot of employers are coming out and saying similar things. Sacks was responding to earlier comments by tech executive Florent Crivello, who wrote in an April memo to staff at his AI startup Lindy that he had made a 180 degree on remote. In other words, he's changed his mind. I think everyone here can attest to the fact that we tried harder than anyone else, and I'm more bummed out about it than anyone, he wrote in the memo, which he later shared as a blog post. Remote is more comfortable from a lifestyle standpoint. You save on commute, have your own office, can work from anywhere, and get more flexibility on your schedule, especially important for folks with families, but it makes it harder for a startup to succeed or find product and a market fit. That's especially so if you're building something very new, like we are doing. Mr. Crivello went on to explain that remote work raises coordination costs, outlining a few reasons why it was less efficient, such as people not being online at the same time, and online meetings being less effective than face-to-face due to the technology, all of which causes us to be less aligned. It is hard to overstate the importance of this misalignment. Isn't that interesting? That is fascinating. You know, we didn't have much of a choice if you wanted to keep running your businesses in the middle of COVID, because we had, you know, the fear campaign and everyone had to be locked down in their own home, couldn't be in parks, you couldn't get within 250 meters of someone, all that sort of stuff. But it's turned out to be not necessarily advantageous. Interesting, isn't it? If you've got any views on all of this, I'd love to hear from you. You can phone in if you're listening through the app or anywhere else in the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425, or the UK 033-0024-1026, or give us a call from Australia or New Zealand. Here's your number, 1-800-670-310. Next hour on the program, I will have something to say about Ben Robert Smith, the only Victoria Cross recipient in Australian history to be besmirched as a multiple killer. These are allegations that he says are wrong and unfair. We'll talk about that. We'll catch up with John Ruddick from the Liberal Democrats too, all coming up next hour on TNT Radio.